Welcome to the Becoming More Significant podcast. And this is all about helping you to become more visible, more credible, and ultimately more profitable by becoming more significant. And you have a smorgasbord of offerings to tap into. So over 50 wonderful podcast conversations with incredibly inspiring guests, each of whom are being truly significant in the world. And they're sharing wisdom and insights that helps them to continually have an ongoing impact in the world by being ever more significant. Then I have 10 Wisdom and Insights episodes where I have captured the golden nuggets from those conversations. And in each Wisdom and Insights episode, I share from either 5 or 6 episodes the key learnings, the insights, and the practical actions that we can all take right now to become more significant in the world. And then my third offering is some snapshots of the learning that I have been doing over the last few years. I am a learning junkie. I'm constantly keyed into audiobooks, to podcasts, to TED Talks, to online courses, to mentoring. And I'm learning so much all the time that I'm sharing with my clients. And so I want to do that through the podcast platform as well. So I will be putting together very short, probably 15, 20 minute sessions on key learnings and again, key actions that can help us all to become more focused, tap into more of our potential and make a real and lasting difference in the world. So lots to choose from. And thank you so many of you for supporting the podcast over the last couple of years. It's been great to have you on board. And long may you continue to tap into the wisdom and gems of the Becoming More Significant podcast. Wherever you are today, I hope you're shining brightly. Have a great day. So I am really excited today to have a wonderful guest with me from the other side of the pond, and it's Courtney Lukic. Welcome, Courtney.
Thank you so much for having me.
Courtney, my listeners won't know who you are, won't know anything about you probably. Could you just introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
I started a practice called Gotham PR in New York close to 20 years ago. We're in our 19th year. Gotham is another word for New York City, for those of you who may not know that. Originates from Batman, always pays to have a sense of humor, I find. So from the beginning, we had really an amazing mixture of clients. And that's kind of what I'm here to talk about today, is creativity meeting business and entrepreneurialism and creating significance within that framework.
Brilliant. And, you know, I'd love to know what led you into PR? What was the drive to go into that sector?
I think having grown up all around the world and being exposed to so many cultures as a child, and a need and desire for constant change lends well to the PR temperament, because it is a temperament as much as it is a skill set. Connecting people, being a people person, and eventually through training, matching business opportunities to creative endeavors and partnerships. So people in our industry not only have a savvy in terms of connecting people and networking, but also a very creative skill set that might not always come to the forefront when you think of public relations or media relations.
No, it doesn't naturally, actually. So you traveled a lot as a child. What was your father in services, or, you know,
Yes. My father had a military and diplomatic background, and my mother is a retired professor and fine artist. So it was sort of an interesting, unusual combination, certainly. But between the two of their careers, I think I moved every at least 3 or 4 years of my upbringing. So that sense of constant change and acclimation, always being the new girl, I think bodes well for me in my career. And also the fact that I have clients now in 30 countries on every continent in the world and across the United States. So not many people, I think, would have that cultural sort of attenuation to be able to work in that many environments simultaneously.
Absolutely. That is incredibly impressive. 30 different countries. How have you managed that, Courtney?
Well, we don't really solicit business. People find us. And again, I think it's because of this multidisciplinary approach to art and commerce, to put it succinctly, that is a very unique skill set. Not many agencies working that way or in this manner. So that means I also have to be pretty selective in whom we elect to work with. And I think that reflects in our client roster, if you look at our company website.
And you never have to solicit new business. That's quite extraordinary. I take it then the work that you do must be exceptional if people find you rather than you finding them.
It's very high level. And again, I think there's sort of an aesthetic line that runs through my entire client roster. And when I say that, you know, it evolves with the market, the time and the culture, what's in the zeitgeist. Right now, we're seeing a lot of interest in blockchain and NFTs, augmented reality, artificial intelligence, AI. And again, that kind of harkens back to my technology background. But in the creative world, people being in lockdown took the time to innovate and sort of look at things in a very new and different way. And so we're seeing this literal explosion or proliferation of new debuts, ideas, platforms, you name it, that people use their time quite wisely during the pandemic lockdown. So my experience was actually probably more positive than many because I got to spend the whole year working on with brilliant people, great new ideas and concepts.
Fantastic. Yeah, I was just going to ask you, how was lockdown for you? But obviously it was incredible. What is it you love about what you do, Courtney? I talk a lot in my work about being in flow, you know, doing the work that really fires us up and energizes, you know, the work we were put on this planet to do. So what out of your portfolio of skills do you absolutely love doing?
I love to help people. I like to inspire new ways of thinking and approaching solutions to problems or challenges they might have. And I think I have done that very successfully. And I always like to tell people, you know, your first career is not your last career, or your first idea is not your last idea. And being in that flow state, more typically your first meeting or introduction or presentation, you know, the last one is going to be much stronger than the first one. So I like this idea of iterative conversation and working and collaboration. And I find that it yields tremendous results. And I do feel that everyone inherently has this creative potential. And it's kind of a question of tapping into it, right? Or motivating it. I just have a particular passion for it, kind of wake up with that every day. But I understand it doesn't necessarily come naturally to everyone.
And, you know, you mentioned in passing that your mother was a lecturer and is a fine artist. So has that gene passed on to you? Are you also artistic?
I think I'm pretty adept at space and color and composition. And that's probably why I love to work with architects and designers. I wouldn't claim to have their skill set. I think I'm very solutions oriented. So maybe a little more on the pragmatic side. I don't tend to go down in the sort of emotional rabbit hole that a lot of people can get in or getting stuck. So like you, I'm a coach and I help people get unstuck or motivate them to look at things a new way and approach things in a way that may not have even occurred to them. I'll give you an example. I'm working with a very acclaimed artist. I just happened to notice in a Zoom session like the one we're having today, something in the background hanging on the wall. Fast forward, come to learn it was a sort of passion project of his that had been shelved, not really languished, but he hadn't tended to it because he didn't think there was any interest in it. And fast forward, I've introduced him to a producer. We turned it into an animation series. We've tied it to a big brand and fashion campaign. So had we not had that interaction in that particular space in his studio, he might not be experiencing this because it wasn't something that was in our original scope of work or assignment. I just happened to notice it hanging on the wall.
Wow, amazing. That must be so satisfying.
He's so excited. I can't even tell you.
I bet. And you've worked quite a lot in the entertainment industry, haven't you? Can you just tell us a little bit about what you've done there in that field?
Sure. Film, television. I've worked with a lot of musical talent. Again, it's sort of this time and market. And when I first went to New York, it was in the late 90s. So just turning over into the 2000s. So it was such a great moment for fashion, entertainment, brands. This was sort of the era pre-branding, before everything was a brand and social media was not even a factor. So you were still doing a lot of these deals and negotiations in person with relatively unknown unknown entities, and you could still what we call bootstrap or, you know, be discovered in New York. And of course, fast forward 20 years, the city has evolved exponentially. I've done a lot of work in London as well. And I think you can also verify that that city has changed exponentially, right? And in two decades. So it's been a really wild ride, I have to say, in terms of my career and trajectory. And I get to work with visionaries across the board. So for me, creativity flows really in a lot of different industries and many times crossing over, as we're seeing with a lot of entertainers who want to be in design and designers who want to be in entertainment. So they really aren't as far afield as maybe they might have been in the past.
Do you ever turn clients away, Courtney? Are there certain people that you don't want to work with?
Yes. And I can tell if somebody's going to be difficult or sort of get in their own way. However, that being said, if I can't help someone, I do know so many people in the industry, whether it's in New York, Los Angeles, or every point in between, where I do refer that talent. If I can't help them, then I will be certain that they find a home or at least a conduit for representation. So I feel as though when people make the effort to commit to the process of working with a coach and an agency or even a consultant, that they deserve respect and the attention of somebody who can truly help them. Not every match is going to be made in PR heaven, right?
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's exactly the same in coaching. And I always say to clients for the first session, you know, if at the end of the first session, you don't think I'm right for you, then that's absolutely fine. It's got to be a two-way relationship, because you go deep with people, you know, they're sharing their life and their issues. So it's got to work, hasn't it?
Well, that's the creating significance portion. I am interested in individuals, firms, organizations, cultures, brands that really are in it for the duration. So it's that concept of creating a legacy, if you will, or building something that's going to have lasting value and impact. So in the case of architecture, in the built environment, you're building something from the ground up that is exponentially going to change people's lives and as they interact with it, particularly in the cityscape, but not exclusively. And then in the design world, it's changing people's lives and helping them significantly. So I think there's a point to curating who you work with, because you invest in each other. And one of my very wise clients, and this is many years ago, she said, "Oh, I can tell you're interviewing me as much as I'm interviewing you."
Indeed. Absolutely. That's the way it needs to be. So let's talk about significance, Courtney, because, you know, this is the Becoming More Significant podcast. I'm just on my final draft of my book on Becoming More Significant. And you have written a book on significance. So can you just tell us what got you into this whole significance thing and why the book, and what does it mean to you? What does significance mean to you?
Well, I, first of all, like to surround myself with experts. So with my book, I'm working with a professional writing coach, and she herself is a well-published author and scientist, journalist, researcher. She's incredible. And I will refer her to anybody who's interested after this interview. So we struck upon this title, and lo and behold, came to meet you working in a significant realm, because really writing a book, the whole point is to make it have a lasting impact and to ideally help a generation of new entrepreneurs. The statistic is something like 65 million millennials and Gen Z, you know, want to start their own businesses. So I wished I had had a primer. I just did it through sheer experience and only came to coaching later in my career, surrounding myself with coaches as well as becoming one. So really the idea is to how to design your life's work and doing that significantly, right? So that's what this book is about. And it showcases chapter by chapter a case study with really significant clients, everyone from fashion designers to architects to filmmakers to makers of all kinds. So ideally through the lens of their experience and what they've built at various stages. You know, these are companies that are 3, 5, 10, 50 years in duration, have created significance in their own right. So I wouldn't claim to be the sole expert. I'm looking at it through the lens of my, again, creative interactions and collaborations with these companies, where they were and where they are. It's very interesting to witness the trajectory over a period of time.
And how is the significance message landing with your connections, your network, your clients? Are they getting it? Do they understand what it means?
I think in essence, again, I'm dealing with pretty visionary thinkers. And so significance is paramount in their own practice. Mm-hmm. And I like to think that you seek out what you want to be surrounded with. And so we're quite like-minded in that respect. And anyone who's not is probably not going to be an ideal fit. So again, you know, I have a wonderful new client. She's exhibiting at the Venice Biennale, which opens this week. She found us through another client in Los Angeles. So I love this intersectionality of talent referring talent and this idea of collaboration. Certainly my industry is probably one of the most competitive in the world and certainly high intensity. And yet when you work at this creative level, it becomes so seamless that it's not stressful. It's very joyful and so exciting to see your clients succeed at such a high level. But it took many years to get to that place, right? You have to go through the pain points and the inflection points to be able to reach that kind of graceful, elegant position. And I take on a lot of the stress and the burden for my clients, right? Because they're already so immersed in doing so many one-of-a-kind challenging things that providing that sense of support, I think, creates a lot of significance because many of them have not felt supported at all, whether internally or externally, right? So it's that alignment that I'm sure you work on a lot as a coach.
Yeah, definitely. And you'll probably find as well, Courtney, that a lot of the people that you're naturally aligned with find you. You just have this magic kind of coming together that happens, call it serendipity or whatever. But
yes,
you find that they find you.
Very much so. Again, I've never really sought it out. So I think if you've got it, you spot it kind of thing. It's interesting because I used to travel a lot pre-pandemic. I was on a plane, you know, every few days, at least every week to meet with people. And so it's been a really interesting experience. I mean, I've always been able to work in a mobile sort of digital nomad, flexible, remote fashion, but this has really put it to the test. I'm sure you would agree in terms of communicating, but it also creates so many efficiencies because no matter what, I'm getting up at 4 or 5 to talk to the UK or what other company, you know, country I'm working with. And then companies in LA, of course, work, Los Angeles work until, you know, 6 or 9 at night. So it, you know, it can tend to make your day quite long. So not having to get on an airplane and being able to do this by Zoom is that much more efficient. I've actually quadrupled my practice and output because I'm very focused.
Fantastic. So you mentioned some challenges along the way. One of the things that you say in interviews I've watched is no risk, no reward. So I'm imagining that on your journey to where you are now, there's been some ups and downs. Am I right?
Yes. I mean, I think anybody working in any creative or high intensity industry is probably going to have very high standards and pressure themselves. So I definitely, you know, people always say, oh, you're going to burn out. Oh, you're going to be so exhausted. You push so hard. And I do push my clients, right? Kind of like the secret motivator in the background, trying to inspire them to go to that next level successfully in many instances. But yes, you have to, as you alluded to earlier in our discussion, have that balance in your life where you take time to rest and refresh. And a lot of what I do really necessitates a lot of research, taking the time to know of what you speak, right? You have to inform yourself. I do anyway, as a practitioner, so that I can then act as a conduit to media or industry contacts or developers. So that really means you have to be a subject matter expert in many different respects.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, actually, you know, because of the fields that you've mentioned, you know, AI and the technology that you're using, and it's changing all the time. You must be constantly learning. I mean, how do you manage to fit in that learning and development of yourself running such a busy global practice?
Again, the pandemic was beneficial in that respect. I did partake in as many webinars and classes and masterclasses and upskilling as I possibly could while also writing a book and running a practice. So I took the resources that I normally would have spent traveling or going on vacation or doing other fun things and put it into professional development, which was how I was able to work with so many coaches and afford classes and so forth. So I just kind of reassign my own budget, to put it that way, and priorities, and really was very beneficial that I did so.
You touched on self-care. So, you know, when you're running a business at such a level, I mean, you must get almost to the verge of burnout sometimes, Courtney, particularly if you're working all the hours God sends and getting up early and having late meetings, etc. So have you ever actually crashed and burned?
No, but I am a chronic list maker. So sometimes I realize that I'm reaching a saturation point when I make lists of lists.
Okay.
And then I realize, okay, I think I need to unplug for a little bit and take a step back. And yeah. Then when I go back, I realize, okay, that work that I assigned myself to get done in one day or 1 week is actually a month's worth of work. That's when you know you're going way too fast.
And so what do you do? You know, when you take a little bit of time out for yourself, what do you do? What's your self-care routine like?
Yeah, in this past year, I actually opened a satellite office. So you could call that one modality in Florida. And so the lifestyle here is much more outdoor oriented because the weather is so favorable. So a lot of swimming and hiking and just being on the water and flora and fauna. Got a kayak, a bicycle a lot. Those are not things that I was doing in New York City, although you can. So just enjoying the natural environment and being close to family. And now friends and colleagues are starting to fly here from all points north and elsewhere to come and explore a little bit and see what it's like. I've always been a little bit of a trend oriented
love it.
Meat maker, love it. Trend starter. So I foresee some migration in the future.
Your tribe are going to follow you.
Many New Yorkers, yes.
Brilliant. And I mean, do you do anything like meditation or journaling?
Oh, absolutely. I was actually trained by one of the best, the CEO of the David Lynch Foundation. I don't know if you're familiar with it. They were an early client, but meditation, absolutely. Just being still and being present for clients. And again, if you're coaching people at a very high level, you have to have a sense of equanimity and calm. And it's easy to get distracted or pull in too many different directions when dealing with a lot of high powered clients. So it is important to remain grounded and focused.
I find starting the day with meditation and gratitude diary and a bit of journaling, it just kind of gets all that jumble of thoughts out of my head. And you just feel, you start the day feeling just really calm and also subconsciously saying, I matter enough to take a little bit of time for me. So
we're also in the energy business. So the energy, right? You're giving me good energy. I'm giving it to you and it's meaningful.
Yeah, you've got to top it up, haven't you? Can't pour from an empty vessel.
That's right.
I wanted to explore your book a little bit more because obviously I'm fascinated because I'm writing a book. Mine is from a completely different angle. So I'm looking at a lot of the self-care aspects and working in flow and continually evolving and growing and becoming the best, most significant version of yourself so you've got more to give to others. Whereas from my brief discussion with you, it sounds like you're using a lot of case studies. Can you just expand a little bit more? Give us a little kind of taster of what you've been writing and also what you've learned about people becoming more significant through writing your book.
Certainly. I mean, it's interesting working with startups versus legacy companies. For a long stretch, I would say around 2015, we started working with companies that had been around for 50 or 60 years and what that looked like in terms of succession planning, bringing the younger talent up to the forefront for leadership. So people hire us for PR and press and media relations, but it's really as much about change management in the culture and the organization. And now, of course, because we're seeing a multi-generational workplace, you're dealing with boomers, Gen Xers, millennials, and now Gen Z graduating and going into the workplace. So that has been really interesting to harness and witness. I always liken it to rotating a battleship in a live water storm situation in real time. And so that really tested my skill set and tenacity, and successfully so. So we were able to rebrand, reposition, and create that new sort of talent management structure, along with doing press relations for many companies. And then, you know, I shifted gears and started looking at startups again. There's so much going on, obviously, a lot of ideation and so much venture capital in the market. And so the direct-to-consumer trend has been really captivating, particularly during the pandemic, when we saw everybody ordering everything at home, and, you know, that shifted retail. And then in our world with designers and architects, they never stopped working. They were deemed essential, at least in New York and Los Angeles and many points in between. I'm not sure 100% how that manifested in London, or if everything came to 100% stop, as we did see with many of our clients in London. So if anything, I think the significance of our ability to work during this crisis, I will say, and come out the other side successfully is the very definition of significance. So I really tried to be there for everyone as much as I possibly could to support them, and also to nurture a lot of new business development because people were coming to us with all these, you know, platforms, and you have to create a whole infrastructure and sort of armature around these new ideas. And sometimes something that starts really small, for example, I met with a professor here who wanted to create a documentary, and I introduced him to a producer contact, and fast forward, now it's a whole healthcare platform that is being built out, and executives are being hired with, and professional athletes are getting aligned with. So it's really interesting that a kernel of an idea can turn into a whole business platform. So the book kind of explores that, like where you start and where you continue to evolve are very different things. And the case studies involve people as young as 25 years of age starting businesses, to people who are starting their third careers and starting these big global undertakings probably in their mid 50s. So it is interesting to track at different points and in between what significance means to you, because I'm sure, you know, like me, significance in my 20s is very different than significance in my 50s. So
indeed. And so who is your book aimed at? What's your target market? Because like you, I also worked with a publisher or worked with a book coach on mine, and they kept going, right, who's your target market? Who's your target market? And it's actually quite difficult when you're talking about significance, because everybody can benefit from becoming more significant. So did you have a set target market in mind when you were writing the book?
Originally, it was Gen Z and millennials, but to your point, it applies to any kind of entrepreneur and at any stage. I mean, it's interesting. I had a young woman that I've known since she was a two-year-old is now launching her own firm. And so I consulted her through the pandemic to leave the agency she was working with and to start her own. So I think this is a trend we're going to be seeing. I mean, it's happening in real time where people realize, hey, I don't necessarily want to be tied to that structure that, or the previous way I was working, and that I have the confidence now, having worked remotely for a year or however long it's been or more, that I can do this. And then that was my experience too. I worked at three really top New York agencies. I had worked in Washington, D.C. I had worked internationally in Europe, and I made my employers a lot of money, and I just thought I can do this myself. So it's not really just about money, as you know, when that's a significant part, right, of being in business. But when you're working with creative talent, that's not the motivating factor. If I know that I can work with somebody truly brilliant and original and change their life, and I know mine is going to be changed in many respects, then that is commensurate to a big paycheck. I can't do that for everyone, obviously, but this is what motivates me, right? Is working with the best and brightest and creating that significance. So anything that you see reflected in the book or anyone I've worked with, there is that level of significance because we invested in each other. And oftentimes it's a long-term engagement, right? It's not transactional. Something that's, you know, I always say client for life, right? So once we work together, you know, we always almost to a person become friends and are certainly very collegial. And then of course, from the business matchmaking and collaborative stance, that's very valuable, not least of which with media context. So when we go to editors, they know that the merits are there for these entities, right? That they're worthwhile to feature.
Lots of stuff there, really, really interesting, Courtney. But one of the things you were saying about, you know, people having decided during this pandemic, hey, do you know what? I don't want to go back to corporate life. That's happening a lot now, because this is unprecedented to have this amount of time to step off that proverbial treadmill and go, well, what's it all about? And really, for the next 20, 30 years of my life, do I want to carry on doing what I'm doing? And a lot of them are saying, no, I don't actually. And they're finding, they're looking for a new sense of purpose. this. So, you know, for people right now who are at that kind of crossroads thinking, I'd really love to do something for myself, do you have any advice for them on what some of the first steps they can take towards doing that? Because you've helped so many people to get not only established, but to become incredibly successful. So what advice would you give to people that are at that crossroads and thinking, can I actually do it?
Well, I think hiring an expert or surrounding yourself with experts is my mantra really this year. And I must say there are different ways to work with coaches, whether it's solo or in a group setting. As I'm finding out, I haven't partaken of a group setting, but I know people who haven't have found it very beneficial. So really going through that exercise as a sounding board to talk to somebody who really knows or is interested in what your interests, what you want to do next in your career, and really kind of mapping it out and then creating a viable, if not a business plan, then sort of a pipeline or pathway to proceed. And it doesn't have to be world-changing, right? It has to be meaningful or significant to you as to what your purpose or intent is. So again, while I do work with many experts on master plans and so forth, I think that starting at a very fundamental level is something we do with everyone. It's just, as you say, getting to know that person. I was on with a wildly talented landscape architect, engineer, visionary artist this morning, and I was saying the same thing. I mean, he's just this very jolly Dane who has a magnetic, charismatic aspect to him. And I find that that carries over in business and being so easy to work with. And I would say that that's really a hallmark of anyone we're working with, is that they just be a good person and add value in the world, right? And that we're all sort of in this together.
Absolutely. Love that. Yeah. So Courtney, unfortunately, we're getting close to the end of our time together. How can people find out more about you? Because I know that they'll want to look into more about what you're doing, etc. So how can they connect with you or follow you?
I think LinkedIn is great. There may be a couple Courtney Lukaches, which is always surprising to me because it's a very unique name, but look under Courtney M. Lukach on LinkedIn. You'll see Creating Significance, the title of the book, which is forthcoming. We actually pushed it closer to fall for the publication date. So look for that and related, you know, speaking panels and editorial around that. And our website, which is GothamPR for publicrelations.com. And my email address is very easy, Courtney@GothamPR.com. I'm always happy to answer questions.
That's brilliant. I'll put all those in the show notes. So just before we actually close, Courtney, do you have one last thought or insight that you could leave with our listeners?
Try to find something that inspires you every day, and that will motivate you.
Thank you so much for joining me today on the Becoming More Significant podcast. And I really hope that you've taken away some practical steps to take right now to help you unlock more of that hidden potential that we are all only scratching the surface of. If you would like to discuss how I might be able to support you in your journey into greater significance, please get in touch. It's calendly.com/SylviaBaldock for a no obligation free initial coaching call to find out how together we can make sure that the coming weeks and months are your most significant ever. Take care.